Well, thank you once again. It's decided to put a little filler in here for the different mission reports. And I had the blessed privilege to be in Germany a few weeks ago for the missions conference there in central Germany. And this is primarily the groups of Russian Baptists and Russian Mennonites and four different groups that come together for a missions conference there in Germany every year. And we've been acquainted with the mission headquarters there, which also have a branch in Winkler, Manitoba, called the Voice of Hope, which also gathers funds from the U.S. and Canada and sends them to Germany to the headquarters to further support the mission work. They have approximately, that missions conference was attended by about 980 people, almost 1,000. A church house, a large church house that was used, one of theirs, was packed to the walls pretty much with people for an all-day meeting from morning until late afternoon. Before I begin, I think they represent, those four groups that have that conference represent about 25,000 members in the churches. If some of the elders from Russia and Germany, which a number from Russia came out for the conference that I had a chance to be with and spend the night with a young man, and also with the head elder from the Russian churches, got to meet him, and that was a blessing. But if those elders could see if they could see this crowd, they wouldn't believe it, hardly. Their attitude is that everything bad comes out of the United States, and there's nothing left of Christianity here. And different times when I've taken my tours over there in the last 3 years, some of them have simply, when a dozen of us were there giving a program, have got up and literally shed tears over the fact that they find out that there's actually some conservative or true Christian life in America. Yeah, to them, it's all Kenneth Copeland and Benny Hinn and those type of charismatics that have come to Europe and tried to influence them. And they just cannot hardly believe that there's something like this exists. So it's been a tremendous blessing. I was at the mission conference last year likewise and spoke both times at the conference, some by invitation. And they're so blessed by that, by this time, that they hear of groups like this. And groups of churches like we represent, and I try and represent when I go there, not only our local congregation here, but the group of a larger body, which many of you in the Bible school here are very familiar with. They're so thrilled by that, and the conservative influence and that we are having on them, that they are some of them are very glad for the exchange that we're having back and forth. Needless to say, we find it the other way likewise, that there are things that we can learn from them that are very clear. But I'm here to say that even though the 25,000 people that are represented by this conference vary somewhat in the stance they take, but many of them are very clearly take a stand against serving in the army. For the married women, they do wear the head covering and take a very strong position against modern technology in modern media and the internet and so forth. So I was really surprised to find out when I got acquainted with the one church that I've been back and forth every time I've been over there. I've visited one particular church that I've become very accustomed to. And when I went to get a train ticket to head home again and take the train down to Frankfurt, Germany, for they had to go to a kiosk in one of their youth buildings in order to get the ticket. They did not have the internet in their homes. So there are things like that that are very challenging to us likewise in how they approach it. I'd like to give a positive attitude here, or a positive encouragement to learn a language to you young people. In 1979, I made my first trip, which is now about 28 years ago. Was it 38 years ago. I had my first trip when I encountered, and these are, like I say, people who have moved out of Russia and settled in Germany after a governmental agreement in Helsinki, Finland, that the misplaced people from the Second World War could be able to come back to Germany. And they always were Germans in Germany, in Russia, many of these people. And in the Second World War, were shipped into Siberia and Kazakhstan, which you see on the map there, and into Siberia. And so finally an agreement was made that they would be able to come back, and tens of thousands of them settled back in Germany. Not all Christians anymore, but all kinds who were misplaced there. But out of these groups have come. But like I say, in 1979, I had my first encounter to the first group that was just beginning to trickle out. And they were heavily persecuted, some of them, and I got to have an exchange with some of the very men who spent anywhere from 14 years in prison. And that was a life-changing experience for me. The humility and brokenness of which they, the attitude of their lives and so on was a tremendous challenge to me. And at that time, I did not know much about life in Russia and Germany, but especially Russia. At that time, most of them were still in Russia. And that was a life-changing experience to me. I found out that the Church of Jesus Christ is far broader than what my little world that I was in. And so ever since that, I've had connections there somewhat, even though in the busyness of the church expansion in the 90s here, I neglected to visit there. But we had the blessed privilege of having two young men here in Bible school and also staying with us for 6 months to a year. And so we went back under their invitation, and they introduced us to some of these more conservative groups. And I'm ever grateful for them. But the blessing that I had in 1979, when I came back in December, I determined I must learn German. These men were trying to tell me of their experiences that they had in Russia through the persecuted years, and I got only about half of it with my Pennsylvania Dutch background and a little bit of High German, but not enough to get the details. So I committed myself to learn the German language, and that has been a great blessing to me in both my work among the Amish, the Old Colony Mennonites in South America and Canada and Belize and various places, even though many of them speak Low German, and also among the Hutterite people. The High German language was always a benefit. I could use it in preaching and weddings and funerals and different times where the older people were very appreciative of that, and I was able to win their hearts different times by being able to speak in their language. All right, the map that I have here, I think they have this group of Missions Conference represents about 110 or so families that are scattered across the vast of Russia, and there may be many more than that, but they have many, many young couples volunteering to do mission work in Russia and have determined to try to reach the unreached people in that country. Even though there are still probably 100,000 of the former persecuted church of Christians in Russia, they have combined with the support of Canada and Germany and the U.S. to take the gospel way up north to the far reaches inside even the Arctic Circle and also into Mongolia. I had the privilege to spend the night with a young man who is up there, his wife expecting her fourth child, and they have to carry water through a hole in the ice or whatever in the wintertime, which is nearly 10 months out of the year or more, in order for their water. They live close to the river and they have no running water. And a lot of that is between 20 and 40 or 60 below zero. It's that hard that this young man was up there with a burden on his heart to reach the Nets people, or the little bit more of a Eskimo type people living in reindeer tents called Chums, and he determined to try to reach these people with the gospel. But he wanted to get married, so he came back south and married a Russian lady there in the churches and took her back up there, and she said, "I can't handle this." So they came back down for a while, and he just prayed and committed his situation before God, and the time came when she was willing to go back up. But life is so hard and so difficult, what these people endure there in order to bring the gospel to these people, to the Nets people, that they are actually looking to relocate at another village where they might at least have a little better accommodations in light of more children being born and the heaviness that it is upon her. He does travel around by snowmobile to visit these people and to give them the gospel. But as she's alone numerous times for days at a time as he ministers to these people in the far north in very, very remote areas. Let me tell you a little bit about the Nets people. I did have a CD a few years ago that some of you remember that I showed here. I should have tried to dig it up and maybe show parts of it again. But they're called the reindeer people, some, because they eat reindeer. They clothe themselves in reindeer skins, which incidentally is the warmest skin on any animal that I know of, from what I heard. And they make these tents out of reindeer skin, and they have a little stove in the middle that they have going in the daytime to cook a little bit something and make some tea, but normally let it go out at night because there's no wood up there in the far north. Trees don't grow. They only gather some brambles and brush that grows along the river in the few months of summertime, and they harvest that for a little bit of twigs and sticks in order to heat their tea or meal or something like that. To get the grips of that windswept area and living in a tent with that kind of conditions. I mean, children are frozen to death at night. They bundle them up and all that. But anyway, the experiences of life, you just wonder why anyone would ever live in such a place. But that's the way they were born and raised, and that's home to them, and that's what they do. They have large herds of reindeer, and they eat reindeer meat and fish, and then clothe themselves and try to keep warm with the blankets made from the skin there. There was a group there from Russia at the conference who had made a trip up north on a six-wheel drive vehicle not too long ago, and a young man gave testimony there of how that experience was. It was so severe, I think they were on the road for a month in making our rounds up there to various villages, taking gospel literature and preaching and singing and giving the gospel to those people. It was so slushy in the daytime that they couldn't go. And so they would sit there in the slush until it would get solidify and get hard at night. Then they would travel through the night. They had a lot of difficulty, and they had flat tires and so on, that they ended up, they said, that they primarily prayed their way through to get to the villages that they wanted to go. They actually took the inner tube out of the tire and sewed it together with needle and thread where it had burst or had ruptured, and then it leaked, but they had an air compressor along. They were able every so often to put air in it and so make their trip. When they got there, they said we were all like newly converted. They said we were so revived by having to pray through all their difficulties that when they got there, 30 people gave their hearts to the Lord. I heard figures that in some of those tribes, 90% through the efforts of these brothers have received the Lord and become converted. I have been so impressed by their sacrifice that they make. They have to take welders and torches and repair parts and everything when they go on these trips, because they go, it's very possible to be 500 kilometers away from help nearly. And I just give you one incident that happened there in one of those trips where they had an axle break. Because it's so severely cold, the steel does break, and some of them did not see to it that all the repairs were made like they should have been before they left, maybe, but just kind of trusted that everything will work out all right. So they stopped and began to repair this and work all night, the rest of the night, to repair their axle. And when they got awake the next morning and had things about ready to go, they noticed that they were on the edge of a deep drop-off, a ravine. God has blessed them with trouble that they would not have fallen into that ravine, which I don't know how they've gotten out. When they do have a breakdown, if the motor quits or something like that, they have to be very careful. They would freeze to death. They do somehow have radio contact and have radioed for help. And help was maybe 6 hours away through other means of four-wheel drive or snowmobiles or whatever to rescue them. And so far, no one has frozen to death or lost their life in their efforts. It is a tremendous sacrifice that these people make to bring the gospel to the ends of the earth. Literally, the people who live up there, you have to say, is the end of the earth. They're also in Mongolia, and they're making inroads there among the Mongolese people and bringing the gospel to them. And I'm just so blessed at the amount of, numerous times they have more volunteers. Of course, they have a big body of believers, both in Russia and Germany, who volunteer for some of this work. But some of these people have 9 and 10 children living in some of these remote areas as a minister of the gospel to bring these people along. And you can imagine what the baptisms are like, to cut a hole in that ice and baptize everybody in that condition, but that's how they do it. Some of the trips are taken in the summertime, where they navigate the rivers with boats and go up through in a couple months' time before it freezes over, and stop at the villages close to the river, put out a table like this with literature on it, stand behind it and just sing and preach the gospel, or invite people to a civic hall that they can rent for the evening, and 6 people may show up. Doesn't matter to them. They go in there and preach the gospel as if there's a large group or larger group, and so get converts bit by bit and win people to Christ in that way. So I got to meet that group that took one of those trips. I would have to say the sobriety in which they handled themselves as I ate lunch with them at a table before I got to the conference. I went to the mission headquarters in Marine Haida, and they were there with Brother Herzog. And so I got to eat a meal with them before we went to the missions conference. And I wasn't able to talk to them, except they were all Russian speaking, except through an interpreter. But it was a blessing to see just the sobriety and how they handle themselves and their commitment to serve God in such a way. It's very interesting that they make their own alcohol up north there, and apparently the Russian government is trying to explore that area for gas and oil, and they're trying to get these people to give up their drilling rights for them to come in and explore the area. Well, they found out they could persuade them to get these rights much easier when they were drunks and drinking their own alcohol and half drunk. They could persuade them to sign on the bottom line and get the rights to drill there or explore. So the government is unhappy that these people are getting converted up there, because now they're clear and in their right mind, and they're more careful about signing and just letting them come and do whatever they want on their land. The government would rather have them drunk. Also, at the missions conference, I met a group from Switzerland. Now, that was very, very interesting to me. When I spoke and they found out I was from America, they were so thrilled to meet somebody from America who would be a conservative Christian, as they would see it, or more true Christian, however you want to say it. And even though we still have our needs, we do not claim perfection by any means, but they immediately came up to me after and said, "Are you from the United States?" And they were so rejoiced. And if you know the history of Switzerland, you understand why. You know, our forefathers were all persecuted, killed, or driven out of Switzerland because they would not allow anybody to live in the country of Switzerland that would not participate in the army. And when the Anabaptist movement sprung up there in 1525 and men would not take up arms, they had a major issue with that. Of course, they had a church and state were one, and so persecution began there in a major way. And I wanted to mention that a little bit about temptation this morning and the grace needed for that. All they said you'd have to do is have your babies baptized and come and take communion and attend the services, and we'll let you go. You can go home from your prison. You don't have to sit here in prison or in a tower in the middle of the river there in Switzerland. And so that lasted that way for a couple hundred years. In the 1700s yet, people were exiled left and right and took the Rhine River to Amsterdam and then sailed for America because they were just not tolerated to stay in Switzerland. Well, this little group of people have withdrawn from the state church and is having a little fellowship and a little group there in Switzerland that is trying to live by the Bible and coming back to reality and the grassroots Christianity, I might say. And they were just so thrilled. I was able to get their name and address, and even though I was only in Germany for a short time, was hoping that in the future we could hunt them up in Switzerland and be a blessing to them likewise. I then, for the weekend, went up to Buchholz in Germany there to a church where I have many friends and attended other years and preached there Sunday morning and evening before I came home again, and had a wonderful time there. So again, like I say, it's just such a joy to me to see the efforts of this group of people. A lot of times years ago, the missionaries came from England or from the United States, and here is so much mission effort has risen up out of the midst of their own people there and reaching the far reaches of their country. You know, the country of Russia is about three times the size of the United States. So you can guess the insurmountable task that they have to try to reach their own people. Persecution is again arising in the opposition of the Orthodox Church. They want to be the Russian Orthodox Church wants to be the only accepted church and religion in Russia, which in time past they had that so much with the registered, non-registered. And so that may again press the churches to go underground somewhat there. It's especially so in some of the Muslim countries, the satellite countries formerly a part of the USSR, like Uzbekistan, Kazakhstan, Tajikistan, and some of those countries that are predominantly Muslim. There is fines being levied upon ministers for preaching or people having services, and so persecution has again lifted its ugly head in some parts of the country. In other parts, they actually seem to have almost an unprecedented liberty for this time. And God has just pulled that persecution curtain back for a time when it was so severe in the 30s, 40s, and 50s until Stalin died and then the revival took place. But even after that, when I first made contact there in Russia, I was only there once, I think there were 200 of their ministers and Sunday school teachers in prison at the time I first, just by that underground church group. So the Lord pulled that curtain back and is allowing the gospel to be spread to the far reaches of the nation. I spoke to a missionary last year who is not on the map, but all the way to the east, out at the point, almost at Alaska, who is a missionary there, him and his family, and they are even taking helicopters and going out to the islands beyond the edge of Russia where the cars or trains would go and taking the gospel out there. So it's a great experience. One of the reasons I feel so good about it is the purity of which doctrinally that they are bringing to the people. I find hardly any discrepancy of what they are preaching and teaching, and with a very stable methods to the people that of the gospel that we would preach and teach likewise. That has been a tremendous blessing and appreciation on my part to make contact and find these brothers who are preaching a pure gospel message. They do not ascribe to the charismatic ways or methods or tongues or those kind of things. It seems to have been doctrinally very stable for the last 70 years since Stalin died and this whole revival movement has risen again. During Stalin's era, I remember one of the brethren giving me the story of his wedding. He said he got married in Russia, in Siberia, I think it was, in the middle of the woods with four watchmen out quite a distance from the wedding to watch and listen to make sure that no one discovers them, because it would have been Siberia concentration camp or whatever, perhaps, if they would have gotten caught. And so there were many times that there was no gospel, no church services for many years during those difficult Second World War years when the men and women, some were shipped to Siberia. And I remember when they said when Stalin died in 1953, the people just took a deep sigh and relief, and rejoice in the fact that finally there was some relief and they began to have services again. But at that time, many of the men were killed in the severity of the concentration camp. And I remember them telling me that the older women told the young men how to preach. They had 20-year-olds, you know, among them. And I had the testimony of one. And he said, the older ladies said, this is how it's done. They remembered before Stalin and Lenin how the services were held back in the Ukraine before they were sent into exile. And they told them how they must stand and how they must act and how they must preach. And sure enough, the whole thing revived in a very similar manner that they would have had under the Russian Mennonite group in the Ukraine years ago. The Anabaptist movement out of Europe or out of Germany and northern Germany and then finally Prussia and then Russia and the revival that took place through had a very profound influence, for many years. We hardly think of that as the conviction of not going to war, not taking up arms, not shooting another person, and bearing the cross, living separated lives, being mocked and laughed at school because you were those, they used very bad names for you if you were the children of Christian parents. So that has spread its ways and its wings. That is still just as easy to find now in Germany as could be. I was only in Russia once, in Tashkent and Dushanbe, and visited the churches there that were still visiting in secret there, or meeting in secret somewhat, and to see the services being conducted and held and practices to be almost identical to what they were many, many years ago back there, now nearly 40 years ago for me when I first was over there. So thank you. I'm only here to, I do encourage you to, again, to learn a language. German, of course, gives me Austria, Switzerland, and Germany, and also South America and numerous other places around the country. But Spanish is another great one, as I consider all of South America and Spain and Cuba and many other places, Mexico and so on, with the Spanish language, and also the southern states of the states here, where Spanish is spoken quite a bit. So I would just say take that challenge if you can, and learn a language. It always gives you a broader dimension of travel and mission work and opportunities to touch the lives of other Christians in other places, being able to speak their language, hear their heart, hear their burdens and their convictions, and strengthen your own in a major way like it did for me. Thank you, and God bless you.
Thank you, Brother Mose. My wife tells me that I don't hear as well as I used to. And I think she's probably right. And I use that as a reason, and I think it's a right one. I don't think I could learn another language because I don't think I could hear those little sounds you need to hear. But you don't have that excuse. I amen, Brother Mose. To be able to communicate to somebody else in another language, another culture, you can hear testimonies of when somebody knows you go to a foreign country and they know your and you know their language, their eyes light up. They feel like you can understand them, and indeed you can much better. Not only understand them, but understand their culture much better too. So, amen. If you young people have anything, any desire at all, or something you'd like to fill your mind with, that's a good thing to do.
Thank you for listening to this message. We trust that it has been a blessing to you. If you would like additional sermons or a catalog, please visit our website at effortofministries.org. Call us toll-free at 855-557-7902 or write to us at Effort of Ministries, 400 West Main Street, Suite 1, Ephrata, Pennsylvania, 17522. You are welcome to copy this message for free distribution. This ministry is supported by your donations. May the Lord Jesus bless you.